Welcome to the show, Wish Upon a Star. I'm your host, Andell Banks. Wish Upon a Star is an exciting program that showcases up-and-coming stars in the musical, visual, performing, creative, and literary arts arenas. We will discuss with professional guests about songwriting, entertainment law, literary careers, copywriting, and other topics of importance in these highly competitive industries. It gives us great pleasure to introduce our special guest today, Heather L. McKenzie, a poet and a scholar. Her biography. Heather's biography is quite impressive and uplifting. Heather L. McKenzie was born in the town of Saint Lamar in the parish of Westmoreland in the country of Jamaica, West Indies. Heather immigrated to the United States in 1978 at the age of 15. Shortly after her transition, it was discovered that she had a disease that damaged one of her heart valves. Heather took on this health issue challenge with great heroic strength and finished the last year of junior high school. She persevered and tackled many obstacles and hurdles with faith, which enabled her to graduate from high school. She has always had a great love for words and languages. Her lifelong desire and dream have always been to study foreign languages. Heather then attended Towson University, studying French and Spanish. With her strong ethic of responsibility, she found employment in Atlantic City and then in Washington, D.C., and successfully paid off her student loan. Returning to Baltimore, with the goal to continue her education, Heather achieved this by receiving an applied science degree from BCCC and a Phi Theta Kappa scholarship to the University of Baltimore, graduating with two degrees, a BS in Business Administration and a concentration in Computer Information Systems. Heather's accomplishments are remarkable. She published a poetry book with the help of her brother, had several interviews on station Baltimore, WEAA, on Washington station, WPFW, appeared on the Baltimore television show, Keeping It Real, had several book festival appearances and sales, and poetry readings around the state of Maryland. While medication is giving her some comfort, Heather continues to write many new poetry pieces for everyone to enjoy. Heather, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Denise. I am so, Andell, I am so intrigued to be on your show, and I really appreciate this opportunity.
Oh, it is one of our honors, too, because we are here to find out certain things that make you such a wonderful poet. So let's just start at the beginning. We have said artists paint to put on canvas the current, period. Singers to spread the beauty of the music and the voice. Give us an idea of why you write and why poetry in particular.
Well, I started writing at the age of 9, and at first, when I was younger, at that tender age of 9 and adolescent and through my teenage years and 20s, it was basically to get through my emotions, you know, dealing with, you know, feelings and certain things that I was just trying to figure out as a young person. But then later on, as I grew and become more mature and dreams were broken and shattered and the things that I put my heart into and energy to pursue didn't quite deliver exactly exactly what I wanted it or what I expected it to deliver. I basically started writing more for improvision, to improvise. And in that I mean improvising for things that I feel that I might have failed at, why I was unable to move as forward as I wanted to with some of my dreams in life. Improvision as in not being able to, you know, get to do some of the things that I personally studied in school and what I wanted to pursue as a lifelong dream.
Oh, I see. Now, when you were writing when you were very young, can you give us an idea of some of the portraits that you did write? I understand you wrote something when you were 12.
Yes. My very first two poems that I wrote was in Jamaica. And I remember when I was in Jamaica with my sisters, when my parents left me and my two sisters to go to America with my brother and my father, and we were waiting to be taken over by our parents. My grandmother used to try to do as much as possible to make us happy because she knew we were missing our mother and we were young girls. So I remember one particular time when she had a little Christmas tree. You know, it's kind of like the version of tropical evergreen tree, the version of the evergreen tree here in America, but it's more of a tropical look to it. And she would buy Christmas bulbs, she would buy garnets and things like that for it. She would buy different decorations, and she would put like frosted cotton on the Christmas tree to make it look like snow, because she wanted us to get an idea of where we would eventually go to, because you know it snows in America and we always ask about the snow. So I saw that Christmas tree with the Christmas light, and it kept winking on and winking off. And a cousin of mine, you know, I started singing a little song, and a cousin of mine, she started putting a tune to it, and I, you know, wrote that poem called Christmas Tree. And then there was another time when I was in my grandmother's front yard, and I was watching a little bird build its nest. It looked like it was a red robin, because I used to read books about birds. I don't know if it was a robin, but it had a freckled breast. And I wrote a poem about that little bird building its nest called Little Robin.
Oh, that is so interesting. Would you have one of those near you?
Yes, I do. I have it in the book here.
Okay. If it's not too lengthy, can we hear that? Because it's an inspiration to our listeners, because we may have some young listeners and some young going-to-be poets.
Okay, would you like to hear the one about Little Robin or Christmas Tree?
Let's do Little Robin, because now we are in that point where, you know, the weather is sort of, you know, in between.
Okay, I'll just try to be as brief as possible. It goes, little Robin, so high up in the tree. Little Robin, with his blue eyes twinkling at me. Little Robin, with his red breast so neat. Speckled red breast, freckled red breast, his red breast so neat. I am watching every step. Every step that you little birdie made while building your nest. Oh birdie, I wish I was as free, just as free as you are now, flying high up in the sky. I am wondering why your life is so free as you are now, planning a little family. Oh, I wonder why you are so pretty, pretty birdie, whistling as charming as can be. Little Robin, fly as high as you can see. Little Robin, with your wings flopping busily. Little Robin, you're as simple as can be, singing sweetly, so sweetly, songs of happiness to me.
Oh, that was very nice. At 12 years of age,
Well, the whole poem wasn't fully written. I wrote just a few verses of it when I was a child, and then when I came to the United States, somebody said it should have been developed, and I finished developing.
But to have that thought is almost, it's just very soothing. And just like music, we can safely now say poetry can also soothe the mind. What does writing your poetry do for you?
What poetry does for me, especially now in my later years where my heart is deteriorating from my childhood disease with rheumatic fever that damaged a valve when I was 15 and now it turned into atrial fibrillation. What it does for me is, most and foremost, it keeps me happy. It makes me happy. It makes me focus. It keeps me focused. It helps me to cope. It gives me hope. It gives me a sense of fulfillment. It gives me a sense of healing. It gives me inspiration. It gives me motivation. It helps me to be productive. It helps me to produce. And I could go on and on. It is like therapy. It's my all. It helps me to live and to go on.
I think that is absolutely beautiful. And I would reiterate to anyone who is listening that if you feel in that...
Hello?
Low mood, that what you're saying is almost a very positive thing to do. If a person is listening, like Heather, you want to be happy, you want to focus, you want hope, you want fulfillment no matter what you're going through. And then all of these positive thoughts that he's saying can motivate you to be productive and really live the life that you want to, even though you may have...
Yes, it's a piece of art that can be very powerful.
Exactly. I am an artist, so I can identify with everything you've just said, and I appreciate that. On the list, Heather, of top 100 African-American poets, they are saying the top five are Maya Angelou, Langston Hughes, Phyllis Wheatley, Alice Walker, and Gwendolyn Brooks. Who are some of your favorite poetry writers, and why?
Well, I know of Maya Angelou, I know of Langston Hughes, and I know of Phyllis Wheatley. I think she was probably, if I'm not correct, one of the first Afro-American poets. I studied her in college.
Yes, she was.
So I know about Maya Angelou, Langston Hughes, and Phyllis Wheatley. Of all my favorite, I would have to say it is Maya Angelou, which, you know, left us a few weeks ago, I think a few months ago.
She
is my most favorite artist, my most favorite poet, if not my most favorite important person, because of the inspiration that, you know, she left us with, the legacy that she has left. I teach in the summer of each year a poetry stimulation class for a mentally ill organization in Baltimore. And this summer, which I finished in August, I was doing the biography of different poets. And Maya Angelou was one of them that I came up with. And the poem that I helped them study in my class was I Know Why the Caged Bird Sing, because it is a poem that not only talks about slavery and what our people have been through, but it transcends slavery and lack of freedom beyond the globe. It transcends in a more universal way. because physical slavery is not the only kind of slavery you can be in or be a victim of. You have mental slavery, you have emotional slavery. People are enslaved in so many different ways. So, you know, she might have meant when she first wrote that poem to pretty much be talking basically about her people, Afro-Americans, you know, who have been through slavery and what it feels like and what it doesn't feel like to be free. But it transcends so much way beyond the globe.
Oh, absolutely. And I also do admired her very much. I Am Phenomenal Woman is another one of my favorites,
yes,
as well. In the categories of poetry styles, how would you describe your poetry style?
My poetry, they are varied. My poetry is varied, and then I will explain the style. My poetry basically is about, it's like everyday poetry. Everyday poetry basically about things of today, contemporary things. Mm-hmm. Some of my new poems that I wrote, it could be like about a Christmas get-together, you know, with family, something that happened, and I turn it into a poetry. It could be about a brand new washing machine that I received, which is in my new collection. It's not in the book. And it could vary from those little things to emotions, to talking about a perfect day and a perfect night, emotions, how I feel. It could be a poetic prayer. It could be a romantic poem. It could be a comical poem about pretty much just about a person leaving work and enjoying a meal and going out on the town. It varies in so many different ways. It's about little things. You know, it's about social ills, social struggles, things that I observe from people, myself. It's about happiness. It's about feelings and different things that we're dealing with, you know, and we deal with on a lifelong basis.
Oh, absolutely. Something somebody can identify in this particular
period. Yes, my poems are very identifiable, and they're easy reads. I try not to make them very complicated. I use regular words to describe what I am talking about, and I'm very descriptive, and I think part of writing poetry is learning how to be very descriptive with your language and your words. That is what, you know, I think is the meat of making it interesting, inspiring, and, you know, readable to people.
Oh, excellent. What we're going to do right now, Heather, is take a little break, and we'll be right back in less than 5 to 6 seconds. Well, welcome back. This is Andell Banks, your host on Wish Upon a Star. We want to let you know, for comments and suggestions, please send an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. We are at www.bbsradio.com, station 2. We are also taking advertisement requests. If you would like to advertise on the show, please, again, send an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. Our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, is Heather L. McKenzie, poet and scholar. Heather, there are some things that we'll say that poets are not as visible, let's say, as musicians. What feelings do you hope your poetry would do for others?
Pretty much the same thing it has done for me. I am hoping, first of all, that it would move them. If it's even to just smile, laugh, cry, heal, comfort, I want it to also motivate them so that if they're in a depressive state or they're in a state where they're, you know, postponing something important that they need to do, that it moves them in such a way that it gives them a sense that I too can do something great, and you know, with this poetry and this poet, if she can do it, I can do it, and want to get up and move and do something. I am hoping it will heal them. I am hoping it will give them a sense of fulfillment. I am hoping it will make them want to produce and be productive, because I'm hoping that it will make them feel. I'm hoping it will stimulate them, because once you're stimulated, you become productive. And when you become productive, you start to create. And when you create, you now have something of your own. And when you now have something of your own, you're able to use that something of your own to help yourself.
Wow, that is absolutely wonderful, to smile and to cry. And I think we all need that once in a while. If we don't get some of the bad, how are we going to know what's good? And poetry does soothe you in a way, like you said, it more than comforts you.
Yeah, and it lets you feel your emotions.
Yes, and the feel, because I know I do. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. Okay. So that's wonderful. What I've heard, and like I said, I'm an artist, but I still have heard people, novelists, writers, playwrights, lyricists, and the like, they speak about writer's block. What inspires you to write with continuity, and do you ever encounter writer's block?
I wouldn't say maybe in a way I encounter writer's block, but I don't look at it as a block. I just look at it as a point of not being inspired at the moment.
Okay.
Because my brain is very active, and I always have something, an idea in the back of my head that I would want to put into a poem, you know, and put into a poetic way, but the words are just not coming together the way I like to put them together to make the type of poem that I like to write. So I would say I have gone through periods where I have not been inspired, or maybe a little dry spell. Or sometimes I'm just tired, because sometimes when I'm working on a piece, especially when I have something specific and a specific message that I want to say and have in the poem, and at the same time I want it to rhyme, there are days when I am so hard on myself when I'm writing a poem. I said, I want to write this poem, and it has to be about this. It has to send a message, but I also want it to rhyme all the way through. I want it to flow. I want it to have word flow, rhythm, rhyme, everything, proper grammar. And all those things have to come into play, and that's hard work. And sometimes I will wrestle with it, and I will write half of it and don't finish it for a few weeks or a few months, and then go back to it and finish it within a day. But poetry writing in general can, you know, poetry not only helps you to focus, it helps you with your writing skills, your reading skills. It helps you with so much, and it can be very tiring sometimes. But the reason why I never stop writing is because it makes me happy, and it's a sense of fulfillment. It's a sense of fulfillment, and I enjoy it.
Oh, great. I'm sure a lot of artists have that same type of moment. It's not a block, like you say. It's a point of not being inspired. And like artists, we always have to be in the zone when we do something, and we want to do it with great excellence. So
exactly.
I know you're one of those people as well. In that same vein, there are certain poetic verses that most people know and repeat. And I think this sort of personifies memorable poetry. When do you know you have written a heartfelt poem that maybe people will quote it after they have read it a couple times?
I am glad you asked that. I couldn't wait to answer that question. I know when I have written a very good poem that I know people will probably just enjoy and can't stop is when I write a poem and it is flowing, it is rhyming, it makes sense, the grammar is perfect, it is a moving poem. When I know that I write a good poem is when I can't seem to stop reading it. There have been days when I have written poems where sometimes when I'm bored and I have nothing to do, there's nothing on television, there's nothing on the radio, I don't have any money to go anywhere, and I just take out all my poetry with all the papers around me, and I look for the ones that, well, I love them all, but I look for the ones that when I read them, when I first wrote them, I can't put them down. If I write it and it entertains me for years and I read it over and over again and it moves me to emotion, either to laughter, to smile, to interest, to cry, and I can't put it down, I said, my God, if it's entertaining, sometimes I read it over and over again. Sometimes I read it several times a day, several times a week. If I can't put it down, then I know I've written something very good.
Oh, that sounds great. And okay, in that particular genre, would it be possible for us to hear another one of your poems? I looked at your book and I saw My Song of Solitude. I just love the sound of that, like you said. Would you have that available to read for us?
Yes, I do. Now, this one was inspired by a nice day and a nice night. A day when I felt like I was back home again. I was here in America, and it was just such a beautiful day. The air was nice and cool and everything, and then at night, in the evening, it had a sunset, and then at night, we had this bright silver moon.
Mm-hmm.
It's called My Song of Solitude. When the air is cool and the moon shines bright, when the wind stirs gently and the stars are bright, when it's a moonlight night, life always feels right. When the rain beats down heavy and hard upon my yard and pitter-patters gently upon the window pane, my mind suddenly goes lame, and I rest easier without any pains. When I hear it upon the roof, my heart stays aloof as I drift away in a peaceful way. When the sunset hits the sky and melts into the sea, and the evening cools down, I am calm and free. I want to just be me.
Wow. I was just so engrossed in that. I didn't even know when you had finished.
That is one of my favorite ones, and it's one of the favorite ones of my my customers as well.
Okay, great. We had read a portion of your biography at the start of the show.
Mm-hmm.
However, are there any other interjections not mentioned in that biography that helped you to arrive at your present position in life?
Well, except for the time when I had to drop out of Towson State University due to another illness that the doctor discovered, but that was a genetic disorder. I was born with it. But it took onset when I was a young girl at Towson. And it's pretty much what they call a chemical imbalance, which when some chemicals in the brain either overproduce or underproduce, and when the brain does that, sometimes it makes it difficult for someone to function properly without medication. So they discovered that, and I have had to be taking medication for that continuously throughout my life. But after I dropped out of Towson for that, I just wasn't able to find work you know, in Baltimore, and I left and went to Atlantic City first, and then I went to Washington, D.C. Now, I don't really like to talk about this, but I'm just going to be general about it. I had a situation where I was at the House of Root because they took me in because I was a young girl in a strange city in America, and the House of Root took me in, but there was a situation that went on there with a lady with me where I end up getting thrown out of the House of Root, and I end up being attacked, which it wasn't very violent, but I was attacked on the street, and I became homeless. I wasn't homeless for very long. I think I was homeless long enough to look like a homeless person, pretty much, you know, everything like a homeless person. Somehow I found my way back home to the only home I knew in America, which was Baltimore. And my mom, she just took charge, and I, you know, got some help from a program, and from there I went to school and got to where I was. And that made me know, you know, that gave me a sense that certain things can happen to you when you take risk, but even though certain things can happen to you when you take risk, because I left and went to Atlantic City and Washington, D.C. without knowing where I was going to live. I just wanted a job, and I managed getting lots of jobs there, enough to pay off my student loan. But I went back again to get more money, and that was when things happened. But even though it is good to, you know, take risks sometimes, sometimes certain risk could turn out to be devastating, and it could turn out to be something that you cannot get over. So I never took those risks again, and I vowed that I would never leave home again in a situation where I do not know where I'm going to stay or where I am going to live. That gave me a lesson that when you're taking risks, you have to have a good plan, you know, to know a plan B. And also being ill with my heart and the new illness that I'm going through with my heart, which turned into atrial fibrillation from rheumatic fever, heart disease as a young girl. It has made me more compassionate to people. It has made me realize that tomorrow is not promised. It has brought me closer to God. It has made me a little bit more at peace. I read my Bible more often now on a regular basis and say my prayers. I worry about people when I watch the news about what's happening to people in the world. I pray for them. And I have learned to look at diversity and the diversity of people and what they go through in a more understanding way as I grow.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. There are inequities in life that we all actually come upon, but I hope that people will look at your bio and see what some of the things that you have had in your life, your challenges, and look at where you are or where you can be once those inequities are actually faced and then won.
Exactly.
Right now, Heather, we're going to take another break, and we should be right back in about 5 to 7 seconds. Welcome back. This is Andell Banks, host of Wish Upon a Star. Thank you so much for listening. We would like also to have your comments and suggestions. Please send an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, email to musicradio34@gmail.com. We are also offering advertisements. If you would like to advertise on Wish Upon a Star, please, again, send an email to musicradio34@gmail.com. We're broadcasting at www.bbsradio.com, station 2. You can listen and also review the archives again at www.bbsradio.com, station 2. Returning with our special guest, Heather L. McKenzie, poet, scholar, and also a TV personality. Welcome back.
Yes.
For our listeners, Heather, who might have those poetic dreams and words still in their heads, but do not and have not put it on paper, what would be your advice to them who want to write poetry? Maybe something like step by step.
Okay, I would suggest that they first make sure that it's readable. And when I say readable, I mean as far as grammar, English mechanics, your punctuations and stuff. But I am not going to always say that it has to be perfect grammar, because you also have poetic license.
Yes.
And some folks do mean to get the effect that they want their poetry to have. They do mean it to be slang when they want it to be slang. That's not what I mean. When I say readable, I mean readable as far as in making sense. What you are supposed to spell properly, make sure you spell properly. Don't make it be known that you didn't mean to spell it that way, but you end up spelling it that way because you didn't know. Because if you're asked to explain your point, then you're going, oh, I made a mistake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also, make sure that when you write something, a poem, make sure that it has a rhythm, you know, so that when you are reciting it and using the voice of the poem that you meant it to have, that it flows, it has word flow, either through rhyming or through even syllables that end in an even way based on the rhythm. Make sure that it makes people feel. Make sure that it moves people. And you know, if you mean it to be funny, make sure that it makes them laugh. Make sure that it makes them smile, because I remember, I think it was a movie star that died the other day. I don't remember his name, but I think he came on Rockford Files, and he said something about, it's easy to make people laugh, but it's harder just to make them smile. And I understand what he's saying. There's nothing more than when somebody gives you something to read quietly that they wrote, and it just, a smile just creeps on your face. Your face just widens in a smile. That means it's a quiet experience that you're experiencing, a quiet, you know, happy way. You know, some poems are just meant to make you smile. They're not meant to make you laugh out loud. You know, and it's harder to write poems that make people just smile. You know, a lot of people can be funny, but just to bring a smile to someone's face sometimes can be even harder. They should make sure that it is inspiring, that it has meaning, and that pretty much it just, you know, stirs up people's feeling and move them into wanting to do something, and that they enjoy it and can't put it down.
Oh, understandable. I hope they got that. But they can always probably go online. It is interesting and uplifting to know all that you have accomplished, Heather, even with your particular illness. Well, based on your personal circumstances, do you feel you have in some way accomplished your lifelong dream?
I am still a work in progress. I am getting there. At first, when I was 9 years old, all I ever wanted to do, and I told my mom every time she asked me, I wanted to be an airline stewardess. that is able to talk to people on the plane when I'm traveling on the plane as an airline stewardess, talk to them in their own language. And that is part of why when I came to this country, I was studying French and Spanish at Towson. I always wanted to speak foreign language and become an airline stewardess. If that's all I had ever got to do and done, I would have been fine. I never, ever wanted to be rich or famous because I was young. That never crossed my mind. My dream was to become an airline stewardess and speak foreign languages. But as I grew and those dreams were no longer possible due to the fact of my illness, because as an airline stewardess, you have to be healthy, and certain things were shattered, I started pursuing things like what I pursued at University of Baltimore when I got my bachelor's in 2002. I pursued business administration with a concentration in computer information systems because my family suggested that that's where the world is going. But I liked that field because it was interesting and I feel it would help me keep up with the world. But I was never very strong in it. And most of the hands-on experiences that I was supposed to have in order to work in my field, it blocked me a lot when I go for work, when I go for interviews and things like that, because they usually want that hands-on experience. And from there, I just had to take all other kinds of jobs that I didn't want to take, jobs that I have done when I was younger just to make ends meet. I was still doing those jobs, and I became ill again, and due to a sinus infection that I end up catching, a sinus infection when I was working in a cold grocery store, and it triggered my other illnesses, and I was very sick. I lost a lot of weight, and my doctor just, after I explained to him everything that I've been through, he said, just do something that you like and take it easy. And that's when I went back to my writing, and that's why I said I write to improvise. I write to improvise for the broken dreams, for things that I consider of myself that were failures. I am just pretty much improvising with the writing, and then through the writing, even though it was once something that I loved, it turned out to just be everything for me. So my lifelong dream now as an adult is to utilize my poetry to become an entrepreneur, and hopefully when I become an entrepreneur, I'll be able to use the funds to get the hands-on training that I never had in the computer field and possibly open a learning center where I can train youngsters with the things that I learned in computers that I didn't get to do hands-on with when I was in college. And pretty much if I can make it as far as a philanthropist, probably do that.
Well, that sounds very interesting, and of course, we definitely know this is what our young people of today need. They need to have that creative ability, and they have to know that once they are creative, they can make different things happen in their lives when something goes wrong.
And also, one of my lifelong dreams is to see some of the poems that I have written on T-shirt, cups, bags, platters, turkey platters, aprons, and things like that, because I have so many holiday prayers that can go on holiday things. That's also a lifelong dream. That's how I would probably start the entrepreneurship. But it's a little difficult because, my funds are not where I need them to be right now. But like I said, it's a work in progress, and I'm constantly thinking of ways to get that done and working on that.
Okay, I see. Okay, I understand your publication. There comes a time in a woman's life. In that conversation, can you give us a poem out of it that I think you had mentioned before? we'll be more than happy to hear it, and it probably can take us out.
Okay, did you want to hear the one called There Comes a Time in a Woman's Life, or the one that's called I'm Feeling Good?
Which one is the longest one?
The longest one, both of them are the same length.
Okay, well, since that's the title of your publication, let's hear There Comes a Time in a Woman's Life, because I love that as well.
Okay.
And we're going to sit back and enjoy it.
Okay. There comes a time in a woman's life. There comes a time in a woman's life when she is no longer inclined to entertain thoughts of a special touch, a warm affectionate hug, or an intimate kiss. There comes a time in a woman's life when she no longer accommodates those playful thoughts of spontaneity that makes her say silly things and make simple gestures just to make him laugh or just to make loving conversations with him. There comes a time in a woman's life when she no longer gets excited about things like wedding bells, being photographed, having him come over, or wearing a special outfit just to catch his eye, let alone anyone else's. There comes a time in a woman's life when she just simply postpones love. This is a time in a woman's life when she thinks of accomplishments like graduation, career moves, professional profiles, business lunches, and mastering handshakes. This is a time in a woman's life when she accommodates late evening dinners at four-star restaurants just to save the day with a business client, and knowing the right use of her utensils makes him smile. This is a time in a woman's life when she welcomes the intimate moment of blissful solitude as the business day cools down into a mellowing golden sunset and evening falls, catching her on the highway in the quietness of her new Ferrari, while the smooth rhythms of her jazz CD makes her exhale and go barefoot on the gas. This is a time in a woman's life when bubble baths are set on schedule, playtime out on the town is only always for fun, and the shelter of her doorman's umbrella secures her into her high-rise apartment, where she welcomes the harbor view of city lights from her 35th floor terrace. This is a time in a woman's life when the possibilities are endless and she embraces class. That's my signature poem.
Oh, that is really lovely. Can you tell our listeners how we can obtain your publication?
Yes, they can get the book called There Comes a Time in a Woman's Life at Amazon.com, or they can go to any Barnes & Noble's bookstore and purchase it. It's a book that was self-published, so it is print on demand. So when you order it, when you go to Barnes & Noble's and you ask for it, it might not be on the shelf simply because it's print on demand. You have to order it before they print it. So when you buy it at Barnes & Noble's, they will just let you pay for it and then mail it to the address that you want it to send it to. But you can also order it online at Amazon.com as well. And it's called There Comes a Time in a Woman's Life, The Poetry of Heather L. McKenzie.
Oh, that is really great. I want to say thank you so much for being on the show. It was remarkable, very informative, and, of course, very soothing. We hope that when you have your future publications that you'll come back.
Yes, I'm working on a second book. I am wrestling with whether I want to use the same publisher, because the publisher is not Amazon.com. The publisher is an umbrella company under Amazon.com that is called CreateSpace. They are the ones that pay me my check. And I'm not sure if I want to use them again. So the next one, the next publication that I put out has to be on the money. It has
right.
to be on the mark, on point.
Great. Are you in a position to have people email you if they have some comments? Our listeners might want to ask you some more questions about poetry and what can they do to develop their poetry.
Yes, they can email me at mackenzie.heather63@gmail.com.
Repeat that.
mackenzie.heather63@gmail.com.
All right, excellent. Again, thank you so much. And we will be talking with you again. This is signing off with Heather L. McKenzie.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this, and I hope to do this again.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. And we're going to take a little break. This is Andell Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star. We want to say thank you so much for listening. And our guest this week was Heather L. McKenzie, poet, scholar, and TV personality. We again ask for comments and suggestions. Please send them to musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, musicradio34@gmail.com. Wish Upon a Star is also requesting that if you want to advertise on the show, please let us know. Email us if you, and it's very reasonable to advertise, musicradio34@gmail.com. As we're just starting the advertising, we have a big special. So email us and we will get back with you on the special for advertising on Wish Upon a Star, broadcasting on www.bbsradio.com/station2. Again, we would love to have your advertisement. We are a local and international broadcasting program. Send your comments, suggestions, and if you're interested in advertising on Wish Upon a Star at musicradio34@gmail.com. This is Andale, your host, and Denise Banks, our coordinator, saying always keep reaching for the stars. Thank you so much, and we'll see you again.